Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Focus on Albany. I'm Cynthia Pooler, and today I'm having a debate for Albany County Executive, and I have with me Joe Vitolo, right, Joe?
Vitolo, correct.
Vitolo. And who's running on the Republican line, and Dan Platt, who is running on the Green Party line. Good morning, guys. How is everyone this morning?
Doing well.
Adequate.
Good. The first question I'm going to ask, and I'll start with you, Joe, is what made you decide to run for county executive?
Well, I was actually asked to run. My plan was really to start to get involved in politics next year, but the county party asked me to run, and after looking at the issues and looking at the kind of job that Dan McCoy did, I thought that I would be an effective executive, and the county could use my expertise as a nurse and a former small business owner.
Dan Platt, what made you decide to run for county executive?
Well, the one reason is to get anything done politically, one needs to be organized, meaning in a group. Usually, political action is seen as an individual act, something like consumer choice. You know, you pick someone to vote for, you pick a party or an organization to join, but it's a much more collective act. It's how you actually bring politicians to heel, and it's how you get policies changed. And thus, this campaign, like many other campaigns that aren't usually electoral, but it's more of a fusion. I want to organize people using the Green Party as a vehicle.
Joe, what are the three most important issues that you feel face Albany County residents?
Well, the first thing is the government of Albany County itself. The county legislature is the largest county legislature in the state of New York, and yet we rank way down in population. We have an oversized county government. We have an over-bloated county budget. And so my first reason for running and what's a very major point in my campaign is going to be to reduce the cost and size of government. The second thing would be to work on developing committees and working on restoring education. Number one, eliminating, getting rid of Common Core completely. putting parents and teachers back in charge and getting down to the basics of education, restoring order in the classroom, and as well returning to the discipline of education and bringing back the options of vocational training and the trades. College isn't for everybody. There are those who just are not made for college. Not that they're not smart enough, but their interests, their, if you could say, excitement, they can't stop at moving ahead in their life, which is okay. A lot of people have gone a long ways with just a high school diploma. The trade options and the vocation options are fantastic. We always need trade and vocation. People will never stop needing them. A nurse is a vocation. Although it's further education, more of a vocational training. The third thing would be to recruit business and employment into the area. We have an incredible amount of people that are unemployed in the Capital District area. The numbers that they have as far as unemployment don't adequately reflect the number of people that are unemployed. It only shows those who have fallen off the unemployment roster, and those who stopped looking for jobs. If we could bring business into the area and increase the employment in those businesses, thereby increasing tax income and revenue, we can straighten out a lot of problems that we have in the county and put people back to work, which is what, which really is the most important thing. And we could start to reduce county costs that way as well. And I guess I would say there's a fourth thing, and the fourth thing is health care. As you know, the Albany County Nursing Home is an incredible sucking vortex on the county to the tune of $1 million a month. Dan McCoy hired a director at the cost of $325,000 a year, although since he's not allowed to pay that amount, he pays him quarterly. So basically the guy gets, $80,000 every so. And he said he was going to cut the budget of the nursing home in half. And he did that by shortchanging the people that work there, by having them work unpaid mandatory overtime, by working them harder and thereby decreasing the care to the patients, decreasing the patient-to-support ratio. And then all of a sudden, he realized that by doing that, people said, you know what, I'm calling in. I'm not going to come to work. I'm going to use my sick time. And he has just submitted a bill for $6 million in the costs of overruns in running the institution. So the $6 million he was supposed to save us, he has now requested it back on top of the $325,000 a year we're paying him. So, there's a number of issues that need to be fixed, and Dan McCoy has done a miserable job taking care of them.
Dan Platt, what are the three most important issues that you feel are facing the residents of Albany County?
So number one, in my eyes, is poverty. And that's a very broad issue because it addresses the not only how much things can cost, but also how low people are paid and what is available. So three ways of addressing that. There's usually when people are talking about what is needed to build businesses, to have community projects, usually it's always a lack of money. And because that is because capital is not available. All money trails can lead to Wall Street, Wall Street banks, but as well as just the lack of funds. So public banks can be devised to give people the resources to do what they want to do, revolving loan funds and the like. The other half of tackling poverty is simply curing it with what's called a universal basic income. This is simply, quote-unquote, free money to give everyone a floor to work off of to meet basic needs. If ever, like, for example, the U.S. economy is, say, $60 trillion. That's enough wealth if distributed. That means that every citizen should be entitled to X amount. It's similar to what Alaska has, where everyone's paid $2,000 a year. But imagine if it was $1,000 a month. It's good for conservatives because it removes means testing and all that. It's good for entrepreneurs because then they can actually take risks because if they can gamble, and if they lose, they don't end up in the street. And it can go on from there. So poverty, issue two, is democracy, rather the lack of it. The lack of it in our workplaces, the lack of it in our schools, the lack of it in our hospitals. It's always a big, rigid hierarchy, not just on merit or skill, but on title and pay and all that, and all those other inequalities. But particularly in government, where the budget is devised by the executive and his team, when it should be about tackling the needs of ordinary citizens. And this can be done with participatory budgeting, where citizens can organize via facilitated meetings and such to create platforms and proposals, which then citizens can vote on in Election Day. It's done quite well in New York City.
You named two, right?
And number three, I suppose, would be fostering a culture of the common good over the lesser evil. So this includes reforms in schools, making things more democratic, actually asking students what they want to learn. The point about, and making high schools more like colleges, to promote. So there's teacher-centered school reforms, like pass-fail courses, narrative feedback, authentic assessment that rather than standardized testing, to have student participation in these things.
So,
as well as citizen participation in, say, the criminal justice system, making that more democratic, more healing-based rather than punishment and violence.
Now, Dan, the three issues that you talked about are kind of more philosophical than they are pragmatic.
Gotta ask the impossible.
Is that something you feel comfortable about?
Yes, because this campaign, as well as other consciousness-raising movements like Occupy, are about changing the way people actually think about these issues, because a lot of the solutions have to come from new thinking rather than the stale, same old, same old. Because America has been quite in a rut and a prolonged crisis for my lifetime. And it's over-commercialized. It's a culture that glorifies violence at times, but also just its violence, a little bit of violence is always expected. I recently put out a statement about the recent mass shooting, not complaining, but explaining that the focus is always put on guns when I prefer to see it as a violent act, that whether it's domestic violence, violence in the schools, a mass shooting, or drone strikes by our government, that these are all violent acts that are on a spectrum for sure, but they're linked in that we don't wage peace, that we don't teach peacemaking. A lot of people don't actually know how to be peaceful, and yet we expect people to be peaceful, or else violence is exhibited upon them, either by the police or someone else, is expected to be violent to stop them.
That's a great lead on into the next question. I had recently gone to Bern, and all along going in rural Bern, I saw, the Stop the Safe Act sign all throughout Bern and other areas. How do you feel about the Safe Act? And I want to start with you, Dan.
My feelings are, for the most part, negative. It was the wrong solution for a serious problem. Like I said, we make it about it being gun violence, and then we remove one noun and make it about guns. When, if we made it about violence, then we could be tackling a much broader problem. Because even if we got rid of all the gun violence, then, as Second Amendment advocates point out, then you could still have knife violence, you could still have fist fights, and this is apparently something that your standard liberal might be okay with, because they usually see it as a matter of reducing harm. But if we really want to reduce the harm, why don't we try reducing all the violence, all of the sexism, racism, other motivators, other factors? There's always there's always individual responsibility, as these people, all of us are actors. But at the same time, and restorative justice actually makes people accountable through community, like community court almost, and community-run remuneration. There's many different elements to that. I'm actually part of one called the Community Accountability Board, where low nonviolent offenders have the option of going out of court and going in front of a panel of citizens, volunteers like myself, and we basically talk over what they did or what they're accused of, and then devise restitution. It's usually, it has to be in the form of some community service, but then we can add on things like write a letter to the loved one, write a letter to the person you wronged. If there's no victim, then it's usually about learning more about the world, or write a paper on someone who littered, or write about the cost of litter to society in general, you know, so they actually learn a lesson, because sending people to jail and so on doesn't actually teach anyone anything, except how to obey and how to be a better, how to be more obedient.
Joe, how do you feel about the SAFE Act?
I think the SAFE Act, again, it definitely was a wrong approach to dealing with gun violence. The real answer to dealing with gun violence is to enforce the existing laws that we have. The problem with the SAFE Act is it's aimed towards people who have legally obtained guns, not towards people who have illegally obtained guns. There's more illegal violence that takes place, particularly in the areas, the high-density population areas, than legal use. There is legal use guns. I know a lot of, I think, 60% of the violent acts that have been committed were committed by legally obtained guns, but they weren't obtained by the person who used them. They were legally obtained by someone else. And so it reduces the number of legally obtained guns and gun violence to about 13%. So 85% of gun violence really is taking place by people who illegally possess guns. And so what we need to do is enforce the laws that we have rather than create new laws that really aren't enforceable anyway, except upon those who legally own guns. So I oppose the SAFE Act, and I think it is an infringement on the Second Amendment. And the whole purpose of the Second Amendment is so that people not only can protect themselves, but that we can protect ourselves from the government itself. The whole purpose of the Second Amendment had to do with what is further down in the Constitution that says, in the event that the government goes against the very writings of this document, you're obligated as a citizen to bring down that government. And I'm not saying that I advocate gun violence or militia action or that we start a new revolution, a violent revolution. But the one thing that allowed Hitler to get everything through that he got through was the very first thing that he did, and that was by stripping the populace of their weapons. So I think there's a certain silent wall between the citizenry and the government that the government really doesn't want to go over. And I think it's okay for it to be there.
Okay, this is not necessarily a county issue. It's a national issue. But, you know, just the other day there was another shooting incident where innocent people got killed. And it happened over and over and over again.
I understand.
I know you can't propose anything on a national level, but it's getting so violent and it's getting so out of hand. What would you propose to stop?
Actually,
all the
I wouldn't say it's getting so violent and so out of hand. It is violent and it is wild, but the media has played these things up. In every place that they happen. They've been happening along the way. But now that there is a culture of stripping the American populace of their rights to bear arms, the media is feeding into that because they really are a pro you could say socialist mentality, that the populace can't really think clearly enough to own their own guns and use them properly. I think that
what does that have to do with socialism?
I think the what I would recommend in these situations where there is where gun violence has taken place. Number one, you know what? If there were people in the facility who had guns, who could protect those people, a lot of the killing would have stopped long before it progressed to where it had gone. If there were armed security, if there were armed, and that sounds crazy, armed teachers, these people, these things would not have, that gunman would have been stopped in a heartbeat. And I think that...
I'm sorry. I normally don't inject my thoughts into my, you know, the dialogue with my guests. But army teachers, in my opinion, is ludicrous. That's what the NRA president wants everybody to do. And in my opinion, that's only a ploy for the gun manufacturers to do better than what they are doing right now.
I don't think it's a ploy for gun manufacturers. I think it's a stated fact. You know, there's a city in Missouri, where it is expected that every homeowner has a gun, a weapon in their house. And every 6 months, everybody in the household qualifies with that weapon who is of age. And in that town, home invasion is absolutely zero. So the facts really support that a protected or a...
are we talking about mass shootings or are we talking about crime?
Yeah.
Property crime, I mean.
Well, what am I... Me? I'm talking about both.
Yeah.
I mean, well, you know, she just said, you know, army teachers, so it goes down to the next level. But when it comes to mass shootings, let's face it, a lot of these people slipped through the cracks. They didn't, you know, the people like what took place in Connecticut, that fella should have the mental health department missed the mark when it came to that guy. That guy was just waiting to blow at any minute. They knew it. They had reports. They were called. They were told. And they didn't do anything about it. So you can blame the gun, and you can blame the gun owner, and you can blame the gun user. But let's back up to the fact that, you know, it's possible that the mental health department is understaffed, and or maybe the mental health department doesn't take some of these things seriously or serious enough. And but I'm going to go more with the mental health department is understaffed and unable to meet the needs of these kinds of complaints that come through.
And that is the county level, I will point out.
Absolutely.
Okay. Dan,
there's a funny contradiction between individual action and doing bigger things like preventing tyranny. People collectivize, people have to collectivize and organize themselves with their guns or with their words or with anything to really get anything done. A good example, historically speaking, this is how it has been. Even in the hill towns of Albany County, Bern, Westerlo, et cetera, in the past, in the 19th century, before the Civil War, farmers out there organized themselves into militias so they could strike, they could have rent strikes because
Absolutely.
They were both paying rents to the patroons, that were the massive landlords, basically the Rensselaer family, and they were paying property taxes. They were paying both. This was basically the feudalistic law, which was not overturned in the American Revolution, and the Constitution didn't seem to prevent it. They organized into militias, bands, and they used their tinned dinner corns to. Anyway, that's just a history lesson. But my overall point is, and to go back into what I would do as county executive. So I made the point about this being a violence problem, not making it about guns, because it could be a knife attack, it could be suicide, drug use, various so-called criminalized actions. And it all comes down, including property crime, it all comes down to poverty, how desperate people are, and how we wage peace or lack thereof. So I went to a training for bystander intervention, preventing interpersonal or aka domestic violence with a trainer. So the county does have great employees for this, but there could be more of them. I think they need to be in more places. She goes around overextended from school to business, and it should be part of the school curriculum, which the Albany district doesn't have its own written curriculum. So vote for school board candidates who will say, we want to have our own curriculum. That way we do not have to be go along with whatever the state or the national policy makers are providing. And we do that by being organized. So that means organizing with a political party. It could mean organizing with a local group, socially or otherwise. And this is how we create communities where we can take care of each other instead of acting in a dog-eat-dog manner. I'll just protect my home. Obviously, neighborhood watches are better than just and all that stuff. And the communities where everyone owns a gun, it's a very homogeneous community. We're a pluralistic society here in New York. And that means we have many different types of people, many types of opinions, and that means you need to have room for diversity, and there's strength in that.
I've got two questions dealing with the county. Joe and Dan both, how do you feel about the county charter, and how do you feel about downsizing of the county legislature? Dan, go first.
Yeah. I'm not completely educated on the charter, but I can propose that we need a what's called, recall, referendum, and initiative processes. The kinds of reforms that were done a century ago in most of the country were completely skipped over in New York. Wisconsin and California, if they don't like their politicians, enough people get a petition on and they can have a recall election. We can't do that. We don't have citizen-led referendums and initiatives. We have to have everything approved through our legislators. It can be very corrupt, regardless of whether there's a D or an R. So we need to put politics on the people's terms. And that means participatory budgeting when it comes to distributing public monies. And it also means, when it comes to public policy, having an initiative process so that if I can get a few thousand people to agree with me on something, then we can actually get something done and not have to lobby, bribe, and spend a lot of money campaigning ourselves.
Joe?
Oh, and on the downsizing, my usual quip is that it's not how big it is, it's what you do with it. So I would suggest, I wouldn't have the power, but I can certainly have some pull on reorganizing committees, make them a little more consensus-based, making them more focused, and making things less so that all 47 don't have to vote on everything. It could be a matter of giving up responsibilities and delegation and various things like that. I think there's different ways of looking at the problem.
Joe?
When it comes to the county charter, I'm opposed to them making changes to it because the changes that they want to make in what I had read, again, like Dan has referred to, the problem is politics. Whether it's the Republicans in charge or the Democrats in charge, they all want to change the arrangement of government so that it ensures their own return and protects their party. I almost wish there were no parties. Because the problem is with parties is that they get into power and they begin to erode what is really the proper base of government. The proper base of government starts down with the people. Even as Dan spoke about, you know, it's important that you have citizenry controlled changes that take place and that protect the whole body of the citizenry instead of select groups that reinforce your ability to be and your capability of being reelected. And so I oppose the changing of the charter because the changing of the charter leans heavily in the direction of the Democrats. And again, I could care less what party. You know, I was asked, you know, do you think that a Republican could possibly win in the county of Albany? And I said, I hope not. I hope a Republican doesn't win. I hope a Democrat doesn't win. I hope the people win for once. The problem is the people aren't winning. A party is winning. If I'm elected, I will not be accountable to and bow to and kowtow to a party. I will be responsible to those who elected me and respond to them properly. Secondly, on the second question, which was the size of the legislature. Once again, the legislature is way too large for the populace that we have. But they have, again, within the Democrat Party, made it so that they have now added more seats to the legislature this time around. And who does it benefit? It doesn't benefit the Republicans. Not that it should, but it doesn't benefit the people either. So we don't need a larger legislature. We need a legislature that responds to the people. And I think we need to reduce the size of the legislature, reduce the cost of county government, and reduce the burden that's being placed on the citizenry because they're taking money and feeding it into the legislature and paying salaries of all these offices that exist when the services, and we can go to mental health, we can go to the nursing home, we can go to all of these areas that are so underfunded that they're not taken care of properly, and people can't carry out their jobs. When it comes to probation, the probation department, it comes to the corrections department. There are a lot of things that need to be fixed in this county. I don't know all of the things I would be able to affect, but I would do my best to affect everything I can and reduce the overburdening, outreaching arm of government. And I would start by cutting my own salary by 10%.
In the closing moments, I'd like each of you to give final remarks. So, Joe, why don't you get started? Tell people why they should vote for you and why it's important that you should be the next county executive.
Well, I believe you should be the next county executive, first of all, because, again, I want to reduce the size of government. I want to reduce the burden of taxes on the people in the county. I have a vision to use the natural resources that we have, the ports, the rail lines, abandoned buildings, and encourage businesses to come in and employ those who are unemployed and give them incentives for doing that. And give incentives to existing businesses to expand and as well employ new people. I believe in and their ability to rise up and do the right thing and a great job. If I was county executive, one of the very first things I would do, instead of doing what Dan McCoy did, hiring someone to come in from the outside and tell them how to save money and then not implement any of the suggestions the guy made, which I find ridiculous, but an absurd and an incredible cost to the taxpayer, I would go down to the men and women who are doing the work on the ground. They know how to save money, just like my wife knows how to save money. You go to the people on the ground who are doing the work, and when you give them the option to show and ask them how to save money, they will give you a plan, and they will be part of it, and they will help with the implementation of that because they'll own it. And I want to show that I support them. My wife and I work as a team. I would be with my with the people on the ground. I would work with them as a team. I wouldn't. I don't want to discount them, you know, because of their education or their place or status in society, which I find ridiculous. Everyone is of equal value, you know. In John's, in Adam Smith's Harmony of Interest, when it comes to the civil society, he talked about the individualism, and he talked about our personal rights. He talked about ownership of property. He talked about the rule of law. All of these things come into play. All of these things are important in our lives, and they start at the grassroots and work their way up, not from the top and work their way down. I don't want government telling me what's right for me. I'm going to tell the government because I employ them, and they are public servants, which we have lost the whole sense of that. What a public servant is, they are responsible to the voter, and the voter has their own obligations, but in the same fashion, they should be the boss, not the executive.
Jan?
I completely agree with the work, what's called worker autonomy, that you described, as well as grassroots activism and action. I suggest that if he doesn't like parties so much, he should probably join the libertarians, because he certainly not only shares their values, but it also leads into how if you should vote for me if you want to support third parties, new politics, new parties, and new bases of power for people to hack through. Because we're simply parties, I see them as, especially new ones, as facilitators. Just as government is a facilitator for our common endeavors and our commonwealth. This is where, you know, I'm a libertarian in that I agree with all those statements, but I'm also a socialist because we have corporate power, we have environmental crisis, we have a social crisis, and this requires socialist interventions, solutions, common types of common action, because we can't do it alone. My lifetime, it's been a drumbeat of do it yourself, you're an atom, you're an individual, not a matter of being an individual. Of course, we're all, my ideology is very individualistic as well. But that's the only thing. And what has it led to? It's led to us all feeling alone, detached, alienated from our work, from our communities, from each other. And to reverse that, it takes new politics, it takes new policy, it takes new perspectives, which is why I talk, you know, in a heady way, because politicians don't. They just use emotional appeals, you know, base instincts. We want to be better than that, don't we? So go to my website, where there's a lot more that was unsaid, more policies and more things to explore, links to YouTube videos and such. I've been making YouTube videos where I explain some of my positions. That's a Green Left Occupier on YouTube. And then, of course, Twitter, Black for Albany, and so on.
Okay. Is there any other way, Dan, that they can contact you through Facebook or Twitter?
Yeah, Dan
or...
Platt at for Albany County Exec.
Okay. Joe,
same for me. I can be contacted at Vitolo for Albany at Gmail, Vitolo for Albany Facebook and also Vitolo for Albany at Wix for my website.
You know, just
the website. Yeah, the website is flatforalbany.net.
This has been a great conversation. What I find, I'm going to use the word disgusting, election cycle after election cycle, is either the amount of mailers or the commercials I see. They don't say anything. and they spend a lot of money not saying anything. And you guys have breathed a breath of fresh air. You've contributed to the dialogue. I hope everybody listens and let the best man win on Election Day. Thank you so much for being on Focus on Albany, and we'll talk soon. Have a good day.
Pleasure.
Thank you so much.